in the day-to-day coaching, encouraging comments along the way that are specific, that they know that you noticed what they did. If someone did something very specific, that you let them know, but you let the team know that you want to recognize people for their effort, for their work. This is the opportunity for a leader that says, this isn't all about me as the leader. This is about you. This is about the great work we are doing together.
Welcome to the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley, and it is my honor to be your host today for this edition of our podcast. I have back Phyllis Henry, the CEO of Lead Like Jesus. Phyllis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's great to be with you.
We have, in previous podcasts, had an opportunity to talk about some of the different elements of leading like Jesus. Many are familiar with the lead like Jesus approach. We look at the head, the heart, the hands, and the habit of a leader. Each of those represents a different dynamic that as leaders, we need to be attuned to. This particular podcast, we have asked Phyllis to come and talk to us about the hands of a great leader. Phyllis, as we jump into this particular area of leading like Jesus, why is this element of the hand so important?
Well, obviously, when you look at the hand section, we're talking about behavior. People can't tell what's in our heart. They can't even tell what we're thinking sometimes, but they can see our behavior. So it's critical as a lead like Jesus leader that our behavior actually displays the kinds of things that we believe come from a transformed heart and from the head, that thinking is couched in being more like Jesus in the things that we think about and the things that we do. So our behavior is critical for people to actually see someone lead like Jesus.
As we think about this application, specifically in our role as a leader, you made a great analogy in the Lead Like Jesus Revisited, and you talk about in this idea of the hands of a great leader, that a leader is like a performance coach. Talk to us a little bit about how that analogy works.
When you think about what we do as leaders, one of the greatest things we do is help our people develop. We want to get people from where they are to where God would have them go. So what do you need? You need a coach oftentimes to help you get from where you are to where you need to go. And if you would, I'd like to think about not a coach calls plays from the sideline, but if we could think about like a stagecoach, a vehicle, a coach that goes from one place to get us to another place. That's the kind of coach I'm talking about. So when we think about performance coaching, we're talking about someone that sits with us, that makes those goals, that helps us accomplish by day-to-day coaching us and giving us the feedback that we need, holding us accountable, and yet at the same time saying, did you think of this? Have you thought of this? Let's try this. Let's do this. And asking questions to be sure that the learner understands the direction. So performance coaching, that coach, that leader that comes along beside of us, that provides direction, they help set goals, and then they are there for the day-to-day coaching. I think it's so important to help people win, to accomplish the goals, to observe their behavior, to praise, to redirect efforts when necessary. But the third part of that is just evaluation. When you sit down with your team, the people that you are developing, or even our children, and we have goals for each other, and we say, how do you think you're doing? And let them really assess, evaluate what they think first. And then as a performance coach, you can go back and have great conversation about how you see their performance based on what they've seen. And what I have found is that the people, our learners, are so much harder on themselves than normally the leader would be because they want to do well. So I think performance coaching is key to helping our teams and our families develop.
Sometimes the way that I'm able to learn most effectively is when I see contrast. What you just described is the way that it should be. What is often the most common patterns or mistakes made in leadership when it comes to this performance evaluation piece?
Well, first of all, in performance evaluation, that becomes the primary instead of the end. Nobody says anything that instead of having goals, instead of having day-to-day coaching along the way, we come to the end of the year and we have an annual review, and all of a sudden, people are looking at goals that they've never seen before or goals that were given but never talked about since, and they get low rates on things that they didn't even know they were to do. The challenge of having just performance evaluation as an annual process or as a process that just says, we're going to evaluate you, even the word is kind of scary, evaluate you, and not have day-to-day coaching, not to have conversations along the way. The challenge of that is we're going to have many leaders who rarely ever achieve what they need to achieve to help the people develop the way that they could have developed many years ago.
As you talked about, one of your goals and one of your responsibilities as a leader is developing your people, that it's when you develop your people that the organization is able to accomplish what it needs to. But if you miss that piece and you're not developing them and you just show up at the performance evaluation, that's when things go awry.
Exactly. It's exactly what happens.
So for the leaders that are out here listening today, and maybe as they think about these three components, the performance planning, the day-to-day coaching, and the performance evaluation, those are three specific components that you would recognize and recommend that a leader would make sure that they are intentional in doing. From your experience, where are the most common mistakes that might be made along the way? What are the things that you might warn someone to say or encourage them, hey, this might be a place that you could evaluate your leadership right now in your team?
I think the greatest challenge in all three of those is time. It's so much easier, and as we have talked about in previous podcasts, the busyness in a leader's life often keeps us from that performance planning and day-to-day coaching so that we rush to performance evaluation. Because those annual evaluations are due, we've got to get those done, it's on our to-do list, and so we might rush to evaluation without having completed the others. But what I would say is that leaders who are part of the conversations with their people, leaders who have monthly conversations with their people, even what we advise all of the time is to say, what would you like to talk about? That you have your people just come in, have a conversation, and you don't lead the conversation as the leader. You ask the question, what would you like to talk about? Are you having any challenges? Let them talk. Let them tell you where they are on the projects. You may not even have to mention them, but they are anxious to please. They want to know your feedback as their leader. So it's important to be able to just ask and listen to what they have to say. In the day-to-day coaching, encouraging comments along the way that are specific, that they know that you noticed what they did. If someone did something very specific, that you let them know, but you let the team know that you want to recognize people for their effort, for their work. This is the opportunity for a leader that says, this isn't all about me as the leader. This is about you. This is about the great work we are doing together. So the more we can recognize our teams, the more that people recognize that they will be honored, valued because of their work, I think it just adds a different dynamic to the team. And a culture is created that says, even in the day-to-day coaching, I may have made a mistake, but there's grace. I will be held accountable, but there's still grace, and I'll be given another chance to do well. So I think it's an environment we create when we do all three of them and do them well.
Wow, Phyllis, as I think about your comments, in some ways, you know, it's one of those times where you step away and you go, okay, it really isn't that complicated. We don't have to have a 12-point plan in order to improve the culture of our organization. It really could be as simple as starting with being a part of conversations with your people. It could be as simple as being intentional to give those encouraging comments. And just even some of those small things can really impact the culture of an organization.
I believe that. I believe writing notes to people who have done a good job, just sending them a note or having that note waiting for them on their desk when they come in. There's so many little things that we can do as leaders that encourage our team, people around us, to stay focused, to stay on it. And sometimes when people, especially when they're in a discouraging, maybe they've got a goal that they haven't met. Well, there's the time that as a leader, we have the opportunity to coach and mentor them, to help them get past that rough spot. That's our job, not to leave them, not just to say you're out there on your own. Jesus never abdicated, even when he said, go and make disciples of all nations, and I will be with you always, even unto the end of the age. So he didn't abdicate. He delegated, but he didn't abdicate. And as leaders, it's so important that we do everything we can to say, I'm with you. I'm here to serve you so that we can accomplish the vision together.
I can't help but make the application, as you were talking about the encouraging comments, being a part of the conversation, asking what would you like to talk about. As the mother of an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, all of that applies to parenting as well.
Absolutely.
And talk about changing the culture of a parent-child relationship. That is something I have learned somewhat the hard way, but I can be rules oriented and I can be performance based. But it is when you open up those questions and invite them in, just like an employee wants to please, you realize that's very true of your children as well. So I hope that people are not just making the application to the workforce, but to those relationships closest to you. I would be the first one to say it really does matter and it really can change the culture of a relationship with a parent and a child.
I agree so much. In fact, all of the principles when we're thinking about leading like Jesus, you know, so often we immediately go to organizational kinds of thinking. So often we forget that our life role leadership, those people in our homes, even as we think about our marriages and our children and our grandchildren and all of the people in our life, this applies in every relationship.
Chris and I, we walk alongside so frequently very successful business people who have achieved by the world standards greatly, but their family life is falling apart because they only applied it to the bottom line, to their financial goals, to the next acquisition or to the next franchise or whatever the case may be. Your relationships are really the only thing that matters when it's all said and done. And so apply those there. I want to turn the corner. There's another picture that you so eloquently painted in the Lead Like Jesus Revisited, and it's this idea of taking the analogy of Jesus as a carpenter and how that really does apply to us as a leader. Could you maybe talk about some of those similarities and how we could see that?
I love this. You know, as we were thinking about Jesus and that he worked as a carpenter, and we know that there was nothing that was random or purposeless about the life of Jesus. Phil Hodges really was the first to think about this and what this would look like in the way of the carpenter. And we began to think about what were the similarities between the work of a good carpenter and the work of a good leader. There were just a few that we, and there are probably more, Karen, but these are the ones that we thought about. First of all, that good carpenters and good leaders must both be able to envision something that doesn't yet exist and then commit to do whatever it takes to create it. And when you think about carpentry, just raw wood and what happens when you look at someone that knows how to take that raw wood and make something so beautiful from it, and you realize that leaders do the same thing, that you have someone that comes into your organization or you are given the gift of a child and you have the opportunity to see in this child or in this team member what does not yet exist. And in my own life, there have been people in my life that saw things in me that I would not have ever believed were in myself, but they helped me see it. And so good carpenters and good leaders have to envision something that does not yet exist and commit to do what it takes. And then we realize that good carpenters and good leaders must be good judges of raw material. when you think about carpentry, there's so many different kinds of wood, and it's very important to choose the kind of wood, what it looks like. How do you judge what should be used in the items that you want to make? But the same thing is true in leadership. Good leaders are able to assess both the current condition and the future potential of their people. It's so important. Right now on our team, we have some young millennials, and I look at them and I think, oh my goodness, they are so full of potential. I see it in them. I can see the future and what it can hold for them. And I think good carpenters and good leaders both are good judges of raw material. I'll just do one more. There's many more in the book, but good carpenters and good leaders must consider the costs before the work begins. I think good leaders are always about reality. Leaders have to think in realistic terms. You have to say there's a price for success. There's a price for what we do. Even as we think about in ministry and in churches and in organizations and businesses, there's a price that we have to be willing to pay, whether it's work hours or whether it's dollars or whatever it is, there's a cost. Well, there's also a cost in carpentry. You have to decide what the cost will be before the work begins. And that is true always in the cost of following a leader. And so I think that Jesus never downplayed the cost of following his leadership. I love that about him. He talked about dying to self, picking up a cross, being persecuted. I mean, he was clear. There is a cost here. And Jesus demonstrated his willingness to pay the cost. And I think good leaders never ask anyone to do something that they're not willing to do.
Phyllis, as you were talking, I was thinking about how young the disciples really were when Jesus called them. They were not as old as many of us imagined. They really were quite young. That really maybe is a good picture as we segue into the last few minutes of our podcast. I thought it was so incredibly helpful the way that you outlined the different stages of learning so that as a leader is thinking about the cost and looking at their raw material in this way in their team, their employees or their family members, sometimes it's stepping back and just being able to identify where someone is that helps us to then be able to know what our role as a leader is. Would you mind just taking a moment and really kind of differentiating between those different stages of learning?
Yeah, I would love to. We believe that there are four normal stages of learning, a new task. And I want to be sure that I say this is a new task because we all have different phases and stages in our life, and we may be very good at one task, but learning a brand new task. And so that would be a novice, someone who is new in a task. They've never done it before. They're just starting out. Maybe someone just starting out a new job, someone that's just starting out even have been in a job, but they're taking on perhaps a new role, and so they become a novice. The next step is if you have been there for a little while and you're in training, you might be an apprentice. You might be learning a little bit more, but you're still brand new. Then there's the journeyman, someone who's capable of working independently, but still needs that leader coach to be available to them, be able to counsel them, be able to mentor them. And then lastly is that master teacher, someone who really is highly skilled and able to teach others. And Jesus was so clear about how, as a leader, to handle each of these stages. One of the things that I love so much in looking at Jesus as the greatest leadership role model of all time is what he did with the disciples. And when you look at the needs of a novice and how do I lead someone who's just starting out? When we have someone that's new, someone that's coming new into our organization, we know that they need to know the basics. Where do you get lunch? How do you use the equipment? There's so many basics. And when you have a look at the disciples, when Jesus called them and they followed him, there's this example of what Jesus told them to do. Remember in Matthew 10 when he said, do not go among the Gentiles or any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. He said, go here, do this, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. He was very, very specific. Do not take any gold or silver. Don't take anything with you for the journey, not even extra sandals or an extra shirt. And he gave them very specific things to do because they had never done that task before. So he had to relate to them as they were novices. When you think about what Jesus did, and we use in Lead Like Jesus Revisited, we talk about the apprentice. Now, this is someone who has been in training, and you know the novice person, as the disciples did. Jesus said, come, follow me. They left their father. They came immediately, and they were excited. They didn't know what they were in for, but a novice is normally excited because it's new and different, and so they're ready to go. They're excited about it, but when they get to be an apprentice, they have this overwhelming, maybe, thinking that, woo, this is way harder than I thought it was.
There was element about a leader working with an apprentice that I thought was so important for us. I know we don't have time to highlight all of the information on these four, but I thought we cannot pass up the importance of patience. Could you maybe elaborate? I may have just jumped in where you were going with that. Why it is so important that a leader step back and understand when that patience needs to kick in?
Well, as an apprentice, you have come to that place where things are way harder than you thought, and you sometimes even want to quit. The job of the leader at that point is to be patient, to begin to listen in a new way. What are you having trouble with? Asking questions. Patience is a key aspect in this stage. It's love in action. It's so essential when you are in the apprentice stage that people are in this place of thinking, I thought I had it, but now I don't. And so as a leader, that we would be caring, that we would be patient, that we would be listening so that we can be sure that we can help them get from where they are to where they could go. If the leader is impatient, if they rush in and they just say, do this, instead of helping them learn the process, they will probably squelch that person's development from that point on.
Goodness, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about different people that I have had come. We have a leadership institute, and we're getting ready to have our second group in. And we watched all these different phases kick in over this last year. And like you said, they may be a novice in one area and an apprentice in another and a journeyman in a third. But as a leader, how incredibly important it is to maybe step back and evaluate. And that may help you as the leader with some of your own frustration of, gosh, why aren't they getting it? Okay, wait a minute. They're in this stage where they need something else from me. What do I need to give them? Instead of just looking at the results, if I look at that person, how much more beneficial that can be.
I agree, Karen. And I think that when we have someone or we bring someone into a team or they're coming new into a task, I think it's really helpful to sit down with them and explain the way of the carpenter model that we talk about, novice, apprentice, journeyman, and master, so that the learner can actually identify that for themselves and that they can say, because we know that an apprentice will get disillusioned. They will get disillusioned quickly because they were so excited and now it's hard. Mm. And so for them to say, I'm in disillusionment. So as a leader, you know quickly that they have identified where they are. So you know what to do. You know the behavior that will help them move out of that.
That is a fantastic idea. I don't know why, but in my mind, I was just thinking of the leader, but to really have that shared terminology, just like in a marriage, you kind of have some codes, some words that you know that you're speaking the same language. It kind of helps you stay on the same page. That's a fantastic idea to really introduce them to that very same topic.
I think it's critical. I think it's really a critical thing for them to know the learning stages and for them to know what the leader can provide them when they are in that place, and that they can call it out too, and that they have permission from the leader to come and say, I'm having a challenge and this is where I am. And that way, this is just another whole culture that I have an opportunity with my leader to say, this is where I am. What a wonderful way to be able to coach when you know that you could call it out to your leader and know that they will help.
Well, Phyllis, we are to the very end of our time, and I feel like we have just scratched the surface. So I do want to encourage everyone, you really need to go get your hands on this resource. I know it's available through all book distributors, and you can also go to leadlikejesus.com to order it. Are there any final words as we wrap up and come to the end of this segment on the hands of a great leader that you'd want to leave us with?
Often, Karen, we hear the conversation between being and doing. And the hands is about doing. And what I was reminded of the other day that, you know, sometimes I love being washed over with His Word and in His presence. But what I know is Scripture says, well done, good and faithful servants, at the end. And that means we have to do something. So as leaders, we are out to do the work that God has set before us.
Phyllis, it is always such an honor for me to be able to have a conversation with you and learn from you. And I know that this has been beneficial to our audience. Thank you for taking the time to join me today.
Thank you so much. It was my blessing.
If you would want more information on anything that we have covered in this podcast or anything about the Lead Like Jesus organization, if you're interested in an encounter coming to your area, go to leadlikejesus.com, and we look forward to seeing you next time.